Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a wonderful panel and a lot to talk about, and we'll get right to it. It is the 4th of June, Thursday, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to our discussion and our program. A delight, as always, to have you with us. Here's how you can join in. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We just ask that you keep your letter short and to the point, and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. Not surprisingly, we've been getting a lot of letters over the last couple of days. We expect that to continue today. So if you keep them short, we can get to a lot more than we could otherwise. Let me introduce the group to you this morning. It's a good one. WAMC's Alan Sharta. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm busy organizing the General Mattis fan club here in Great Barrington.
Excellent. We'll start there in just a second. But yes, some very interesting thoughts there. UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter extraordinaire. Good morning, Rosemary. Hello. Hello, Rosemary.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Oh, okay. Well, I was. I just wanted to say that it's already begun. I will not be joining that group as a fan club of General Mattis, and not because I don't live in Great Barrington.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that.
Well, that makes that clear, yes.
Yes. We'll get to that in a second. I have the benefit of having read your Facebook feed, of knowing, but I look forward to hearing from you in just a moment. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Good morning, Jen. Good morning, Jen.
Love
we all say that. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Did you press the button?
Oh, the buttons are pressed.
Oh, okay. Sometimes you say, oh, I forgot to press the button.
Yeah, I know.
So I just wondered if you did that.
No, yeah. The buttons are pressed. We don't know. Okay, so I think she's on the app. So I think that's the issue. But we'll...
Oh, I'm in.
Oh, you're here.
Yay.
Yes, no, it just suddenly came in. So it's nice and loud and clear. I love it.
Excellent. Well, good morning. You heard us say that, I hope.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good morning to you, and thank you for being with us. Our old friend Malcolm Nance is with us, counterterrorism expert, best-selling author. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you on the program. It's been a while, and it's good to hear your voice. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. So as Alan indicated, the big story, of course, this morning is General Mattis. You'll remember Jim Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, as the president would always call him, was the president's first defense secretary. Well, yesterday he excoriated President Trump, accusing the nation's chief executive of deliberately trying to divide Americans, taking exception to his threats of military force on American streets, and praising those demanding justice following the police killing of George Floyd. Quote, this is a statement that was published by The Atlantic. Quote, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people, does not even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years of this deliberate effort. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years without mature leadership. He continued, we can unite without him, drawing on the strengths inherent in our own civil society. This will not be easy, as the past few days have shown, but we owe it to our fellow citizens, to past generations that bled to defend our promise, and to our children. Trump responded on Twitter on Wednesday night, criticizing Mattis in a pair of tweets that had at least two factual errors. Probably the only thing Barack Obama and I had in common is that we both had the honor of firing Jim Mattis, the world's most overrated general. I asked for his letter of resignation and felt great about his nickname was Chaos, which I didn't like, and changed it to Mad Dog, Trump tweeted. His primary strength was not military, but rather personal public relations. I gave him a new life, things to do, and battles to win, but he seldom brought home the bacon. I didn't like his leadership style or much else about him, and many others agree, glad he is gone. In reality, Mattis tendered his resignation in 2018. 18 as he disagreed with Trump's decision to pull U.S. forces out of Syria. Numerous U.S. officials have said Mattis's military call sign was Chaos, and the nickname Mad Dog, which Mattis does not like, came along years before Trump became president. Mattis's rebuke marked an extraordinary shift for the retired Marine general, who said he felt it was his duty to stay out of politics after resigning as Pentagon chief in 2018. That from the Washington Post. Alan.
Well, there's not much to say except seven. I know I'm going to catch it from Rosemary, but 7 days in May, was that Kirk Douglas, the senator who was, with a general, has the guts to do what he needs to do. I understand he's a military man. I understand all of that. Nevertheless, at a time when he really needed to speak up, he spoke up, and that's what I'm going to say right now.
7 days in May. Kirk Douglas, Burt Lancaster.
Burt Lancaster.
Yes, you're correct. All right. Malcolm.
Well, as a military man, let me tell you, it is about time General Mattis spoke up. And to tell you the truth, he's about 2 years too late.
Mm-hmm.
He could have helped end a lot of this if he had done this just before the impeachment, if he had done this just after Donald Trump tried to commit extortion with the Ukraine, or at any time during the Mueller report. This would have broken Trump's credibility at that time. You see Trump's comments this morning are him flailing. I mean, first off, with the pathological lie that he just came out and said about he nicknamed Mattis Mad Dog, that was a military thing that did that. He didn't love him. The man's like a warrior scholar, you know. So he wasn't particularly enthralled with that. Chaos 6 was his actual call sign, which means commander of chaos. Which is what his job was to bring chaos down on the Taliban in Afghanistan. He did an appreciably good job. But as Secretary of Defense, I thought he was too acquiescent. You know, you could see that he was dedicated to the troops. He was dedicated to the people of the Defense Department. But he really should have spoken up for the Constitution much earlier than this.
Rosemary Armit.
Okay. Before we go, isn't it better late than never? I mean, here's a guy who is beloved. At least we read this in the New York Times by his troops, who has a lot of credibility, who thought that the military should not be interfering in the political process. And I think it's some personal danger to himself, did what he had to do. So my question to you, Malcolm, and respectfully, don't you think it's better? Don't you think it's better that he did it than he didn't do it at all?
No. Yeah, I'm in the fan club. I'll come over. I'm only 20 miles away. But all I'm saying is, you know, in that analogy with the movie 7 Days in May, Burt Lancaster was the general who was committing treason, you know, and it was Kirk Douglas, who was the Marine colonel, who identified that there was a plot to overthrow the president. His name was Jinxon there, by the way, if you want to throw call signs around. But the moment he identified that the nation was in danger, he dropped the dime, right? This is what Mattis should have done. Now it's out, and let's hope there's a cascade of other Republicans that come along with them. I'm not going to hold my breath. I think they're all cowards, and I don't think they particularly care about the Constitution as much as they care about remaining in power.
But Malcolm, there were a lot of other generals who joined that. Retired general, joint chiefs, all the rest have joined with him on this. So I think he gets a lot of credit for leading the way here. It could not have been an easy decision for him to make. I know Rosemary's going to disagree with a lot of this, but let's hear from her.
You're just going to keep talking until we go to the break, so I can't say it.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, everything Malcolm said, plus let us point out that in fall of 2018, Mattis was all gung-ho and supportive of Trump's decision to send troops to the southern states on the border. That is a precursor to what he's doing now. If it was okay, in fact, Mattis said it was not only legal, but it would be helpful for troop readiness to send those troops into American countryside to do supposedly police work, which was helping the border police. It totally is the same thing. So for him to come out now, 2 years later, and to get these accolades as a hero, I just can't deal with it. Yeah, I'm glad he did it. It's better that he opened his mouth. He wrote a whole book. He had all those chances. Malcolm mentioned that he might have said something when it really mattered. Now it's like, oh, yeah, we're all getting it now. In fact, even Esper, who knows about Esper, but he went further than Mattis. He did it in real time, broke with the president. Mm. It was never a popular decision. Now, that took courage. Mattis never showed that kind of courage.
Jen?
And that's back now, but at least he did it in real time.
Jen?
You know, that's exactly the context that I'm looking at it in, is comparing, contrasting, you know, what Mattis is doing versus what Esper is doing now. And, you know, the thing to kind of watch is, will that embolden Esper to take an even harder stance, or will he backpedal? Because we've seen Esper backpedal on a lot of stuff too, and he's sort of also flailing with his relationship with the administration. And you know, I'm curious of what's going to happen for this. You know, is Mattis still a catalyst? Will other people follow that leadership, or is this just going to, you know, die in the next 24? You know, our news cycle.
Well, you know, we're already
Esper already pulled back, and troops that were supposed to leave Washington got orders, isn't that correct, to stay on even longer. So he's already back to kowtowing to the White House.
I'm no big Esper fan, that's for sure. And he's getting plenty of criticism because, you know, he arranged the walk across Lafayette Square and all the rest of it. I think what happened with Esper is he took one look and said, you know, I'm on the wrong side here. I'm getting criticism. Who knows what his wife was telling him? I don't know. But I got to tell you, it didn't look kosher to me.
The interesting thing about Esper, though, is that he does seem to have, you know, a lot of Republicans coming out in his support. You know, like West Virginia Republican there, Senator Shelley Moore Capito, you know, said, you know, you know, she likes him. She wants to keep him because we know that's what happens in this administration, right? You start speaking out, and you're next in line. You know, out the turnstile.
What are the odds?
Right. I think he's a dead Secretary of Defense walking. I don't think he'll. I mean, his little pushback the other day by reminding the armed forces that he was beholden to the Constitution and not the president is going to cost him. This president will not tolerate someone who's loyal to the Constitution over him. So I suspect that he will be out in a couple of days. He did make that reversal on the troops. That was after a White House meeting. The Secretary of Defense is required to follow all lawful orders. And Trump probably gave him a straight in your face order to get those troops back in there. We'll see how it shakes out. But I don't think he'll be Secretary of Defense long.
Either way, well, speaking I of admire odds, at point well, Esper more than Mattis.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of odds, I'm wondering what folks think about then. Okay, if Esper's out, then who's in? And a lot of people are looking at you know, the Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, who's very pro-Trump, very pro-military, and then what does that mean?
Cotton has an editorial we just talked about in the Media Project saying send in the troops. Even now, when the protests are dying down, they're certainly less violent than they were at the beginning of the week. But he's saying send in the troops. That would be a disaster.
Yeah, Tom Cotton is an absolute disgrace, and I'm saying that as a former service member. And he was a former service member. Apparently, he didn't learn anything as an officer in the armed forces about the Constitution and, you know, not using U.S. troops against U.S. citizens. He wrote that op-ed, and he was essentially advocating using everything, you know, short of M1 tanks on these protesters. That's disgraceful. If he's posturing himself as the next Trump or the guy to be the next vice presidential candidate under Donald Trump Jr., he's doing a great job of it, but he's a disgrace. He is an absolute disgrace. And I suspect that he could be the Secretary of Defense if Donald Trump were to get rid of Esper. But this is the guy we're going to have to – there will be a rebellion in the ranks. And we've pretty much seen a rebellion this week on a small scale by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff,
writing a letter to all combat commanders and service commanders, reminding them they are beholden to the Constitution and not the chair of the President of the United States, first and foremost.
There is an article in the New York Times. David Leonhardt writes, since President Trump shot to the top of the Republican presidential field 5 years ago, his critics on both the right and the left have been eager to predict his imminent political demise. So far, of course, those critics have yet to be right. There is no way to know whether the current moment is different, but it's becoming clear that Trump is in the midst of one of the worst stretches of his presidency, if not the single worst. And he goes on to write that Trump has been the target of harsh criticism from political elites before, and it has never shaken his solid support among Republican voters. But Trump does seem to be losing the support, at least temporarily, of swing voters. Alan?
No, I think that's right. Look, he's getting the reputation of being a bit of a madman. Not a bit of a madman. People are embarrassed by it. And I think that's, you know, by the way, in all due deference to Rosemary, who I have such great respect for, I'm sticking with my fan club presidency on Mattis. I think, you know, you can say he stayed there for 2 years, and he did. And you can say, you know, he was too loyal, and he was. On the other hand, right now, this is what this country needs. And I tell you, I think that all of the analysts that I've seen are saying Mattis's position now is deep, deep trouble for this president. And that's why he's lashing out. The president is lashing out the way he is. But with all of that verbiage, I forgot what the question was.
No, I was just asking you about the idea of the swing voters and what effect this would have on them.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. We see this. I've been keeping my eyes peeled on all of the polls, as I know. You're as good at finding polls that are just coming out. But I'm not seeing anything really that current, Joe, that indicates where the purples are in this. But they can't be happy. They can't, because the guy's an embarrassment now. And that's something they can't put up with.
You know what'll swing those voters more than Mattis will be Trump's lie about how he was inspecting the bunker.
Yeah.
He went down there to inspect it, not to run away from protesters. And why his wife and son were there, I guess he didn't put that in his explanation, but come on, what a coward.
It is so laughable.
Yeah. What about America watching their children being pepper sprayed and rubber bulleted as he walked across that Lafayette Square, and our kids, and that's who they are. They are America's kids. They're white, they're black, they're Asian. They are incredible. It was an incredible scene that was repulsive.
We just have to take a break. We'll go away, and we'll be right back after news. I was just checking the polling during the break, and the Monmouth University poll that was released this morning shows Biden with an 11-point nationwide lead over the president, 52% to Trump's 41%. That gap is wider than it was in May, up 2 percentage points, and it is significantly larger than the gap before Biden locked up the Democratic nomination in March, when poll showed a 3-point race. To your point, Alan, as to the purples, there isn't a lot of information in here other than there does seem to be some support even
defection.
Eroding, even amongst the Republicans, that number is down slightly. So for whatever that is.
Joe, I'd like to, Joe, if I may, I just want to say something. A lot of people write me, write you, write the program, that Biden is not the right guy, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's going to lose the election. And yet he keeps getting higher and higher polling. He won the nomination, or he has up to now, and I don't see anybody's going to take it away from him. And it seems to me one has got to give him a little credit, right?
Well, right from the beginning, right? I mean, he's been even when he was at his lowest and was not doing well in the initial primaries, he still was polling well as somebody who could beat Donald Trump. And then South Carolina was the turnaround.
Right.
Rosemary, what do you make of the poll?
I think that Trump continues to mess up and act like a jerk, and Biden has been basically locked in his basement, except when he's come out in a mask with his fantastic wife also in a mask, and has listened to people and act like a human being. And that comparison is hard to look at and not say, okay, I'd rather have Biden than Trump. He is far from an ideal candidate, not my first pick, but it's just such a clear choice over Trump. And if he can continue to do that, keep his mouth mostly shut behind the mask, very good idea, and pick a really good candidate for vice president, I think he can pull it off. I would like
Rosemary, respectfully, always respectfully, I want to ask you this question. At one point, you did predict that Trump would be reelected. And
at one point, did I predict it?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did, and I still think it can happen. I have said that you may be right that he will lose, but no way do I see it as a landslide, even now. That 11-point lead looks really good, but Hillary had that at one point, and at several points during the 2016 election, and it all dwindled away. And we've seen already, I mean, who would have predicted since I first said we're doomed that there'd be a plague worldwide, there'd be unrest across the United States, there'd be maybe a real chance at police reform that's astounding, there's a new civil rights movement. Who would have predicted all of that? So who knows what'll come next?
Malcolm.
Well, what do you mean who would have? I did. Sorry.
Malcolm?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I diverge from Rosemary's opinion because I don't think Biden has, you know, been locked in a bunker basement like Donald Trump has been alleging. I don't know about you, but I get his campaign materials all the time. And if I'm not mistaken, he just made a speech in Philadelphia where he came off absolutely like the president. And the things that he said in that speech were precisely what people needed to hear. He wasn't wearing a mask there. He was exercising good social distancing. But when he did come out, he came out and went to the black church in Delaware. He went to a war memorial. I think he's been out a lot more than he has been in the past. It's Donald Trump, who we're just so used to seeing on those daily briefings that, you know, people give him benefit of the doubt that he's out there all the time. He's the guy who's locked in the bunker, and that's why he did that stunt at the church, because hashtag bunker boy was trended number one on Twitter. And as I understand it from the New York Times, it was Ivanka Trump and Hope Hicks who came up with that idea for him to come out there and, you know, perform that stunt, which has now alienated the Defense Department. And the, you know, the combatant commanders and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that can't happen twice. So who knows what Trump will do next? But to him, his evangelical followers loved it, and he may continue doing outrageous things.
Jen,
there's a lot to say, but I think again with the polls what's the word that's being used? Fluid. I think there are a lot of swing voters out there, and I think it's going to take more than just showing up and making speeches to really persuade them. I think it is an action speak louder than words sort of situation. I think people are going to be looking at policies. I mean, I think you've seen these activists, it does go beyond social media right now. People are doing their homework. They're looking at, you know, rights and legislation. So I think, you know, words are only going to take candidates so far at this point.
Let's go to the other big story, of course, that is making news. And that is the additional charges that have been filed. The Attorney General, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, upgraded charges against the officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck, charged the other three involved. The new charges come just 2 days after the governor asked Ellison to take over the prosecution in the killing of George Floyd. The Attorney General's office on Wednesday upgraded charges against the former Minneapolis police officer who knelt on his neck. The decision came after Ellison took over the prosecution from the Hennepin County attorney, Mike Freeman, and followed more than a week of sometimes violent protests calling for tougher charges against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who had pinned Floyd to the ground and held him there for nearly 9 minutes. Protesters also demanded the arrest of all three former officers who were present but failed to intervene. All three were booked in the Hennepin County jail on Wednesday. So the first charge in the officer, Chauvin, went from third degree to second degree, and then many other charges, a whole slew of charges against the other three officers. So, Malcolm, what do you make of the increase in the charges, and what does that do anything, do you think, to quell the protests and ultimately even the violence that we have seen over the last week and a half?
Well, first, let's segregate the violence from the protest.
Yes.
Because the people who are carrying out the violence on the whole are the same people who carry out violence whenever we have a World Bank meeting in Washington, D.C., any type of G7 or other type of internationalist summit. It's a group known as Black Bloc, who now refer to themselves as Antifa, anti-fascist. They are not an organized group. It's an ideology of people who don't believe that there should be governmental systems. They're anarchists. They would do this if there was a kindergarten parade. So let's separate that from the peaceful protests who see the police violence for what it is. Believe me, as an African-American man, I understand where they're coming from, because no matter what my background was, they don't see that when they pull someone over. They see an African-American man, and it engenders a completely different mindset. I don't understand why. I've trained law enforcement, the state's Homeland Security, the state SWAT teams here in counterterrorism and terrorist identification. And, you know, they just have this inculcated belief in law enforcement that blacks are more dangerous with guns than any other group, when in fact it's sovereign citizens, white people with guns, who will go into a gun battle with cops way before somebody, you know, who is carrying out some low-level drug deal will. That being said, the charges are just being upgraded by Attorney General Ellison are important not just for this case. Police need to be put on notice now. I love these guys. They have a hard job, but there's 1% of those guys who love the violence. They love the essentially sadism of their work. And now they need to see that they can be held accountable, and, you know, their unions won't be able to get them out of it this time.
The three officers were charged with aiding and abetting murder. Rosemary.
Right.
I really like Ellison, Keith Ellison. I think he has a tough job, and he has done it with a lot of class and speed so far. He went in and did not accede to what would have been political demands for first-degree murder charges against all four of those cops. He did not even give first-degree to Chauvin, the guy who did the kneeling, but kept it at a second-degree. And I'm glad that the family was happy with that, because what Ellison wants, more than charges, which, you know, prosecutors can do whatever they want, he wants convictions. And even with the charges he had, even if he had downgraded them and had only done one, as we originally had, is going to have a really difficult time getting a conviction. Juries don't want to convict cops, white cops especially. But more than that, our laws are written to give kind of impunity and a leeway to cops so that they can handle bad guys. And they have gotten away with that forever. And you look at the cases, Freddie Gray, Philando Castile, those were also cases where there was incredible video, you knew what was going on, and yet the juries came back with verdicts that were true to them, that it did not fit the law. Trayvon Martin still is the case that, well, it's a vigilante, not cops, similar. the law was written in a way that prosecutors would not have gotten a conviction. I still think that's why they didn't bring charges, not because of racism, but because they knew it was futile. So Malcolm is right. The fact that they make the charges now shows an intent and a notice to cops that we are watching you. But more importantly, you've got to go in and make reform at the level of departments and across the whole country. Use of force is too loose. The laws are written for vigilantes. All of that has to be looked at. Obama was starting to do it, and then Trump stopped it all. And that brought this about, I think.
Jen.
Yeah, I think, I am pretty in line with what Malcolm and Rosemary have already indicated. And I think that, the one thing I did sort of pause and question about Ellison when he sort of brushed off he said that his decisions weren't influenced by the public. And I have a hard time believing that, because I think the public has done so much to raise awareness and, you know, make this a public issue. It is a public health issue. It is a public policy issue. And so to kind of brush that off seemed a little odd. But again, he is making decisions that, you know, few others in his field are. And I think, this story, what we're seeing today, ties in a lot with what we saw in the Obama roundtable last night, bringing up his national pledge, for example, for mayors and his 8-point slate of reforms. So the work is being done. The frameworks are out there. It just takes someone in charge to adopt them for our cities, our states, and our country.
Mm-hmm. Alan, do you think it'll help the overall mood of the country as we move forward here and the memorials for George Floyd take part today and into next week?
Well, let me say that I agree with everything that's been said by the three great participants today. However, I also think we have to keep our eye on one thing. These cops, these three or four cops, are not unique. We have police officers, and maybe, as Rosemary says, maybe 1% or whoever said that, 1% of the country, Malcolm, of the country. Nevertheless, we've all seen them. We know who they are. And believe me, we've seen them in small towns like this one, and the one I'm sitting in right now, we've seen them in other places. So the thing that I'm a little concerned about is that these guys will be the poster people for all of this, and I think that they should be. And it should be, as it's been said already, a warning to everybody else that you better not do the same thing. On the other hand, I would hate to think that these people go to jail and everybody else continues as is. That's what I worry about.
With that said,
well, that's
I'm just going to hold you, Jen. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, I promise. Quick break. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, and Malcolm Nance. We'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, and Malcolm Nance. We will go to letters in just a second. Jen, I cut you off, though. Please make your point.
Just to dovetail off of what Alan said about, you know, being afraid for just these cops to go to jail and then that's it. And I just wanted to emphasize that's why these national reforms from the community level, the state level, on up to the national level are so important. And again, we've had this infrastructure around for years, but no one's put it into play.
We have letters. I want to get to them. The beginning ones here are on the General Mattis question that we talked about. Susan says, do we cut Mattis slack? I was raised to turn the other cheek. The Trump administration has been one disaster after another, and now 4 years in, we see the body count on a daily basis. So many people enabled this, including Mattis. People are dying. I'm not sure better late than never should let him off the hook. Our next letter is from Peter, who says, I agree with Malcolm. As a former officer in the United States Army, I've been appalled by the failure of the senior military chiefs to speak out against this president. The oath we take to defend the Constitution of the United States mentions nothing about turning a blind eye to injustice. And indeed, as officers, we are trained to speak up and to take action against unlawful and unethical behavior. Quit hiding, senior commanders. Ed says, timing is everything. If Mattis spoke out before, it would have been drowned out and dismissed as a never-Trumper and establishment blah-bitty-blah. Saying it now carries much more gravitas. Bob says, your guest accuses Republicans of being cowards. What derogatory noun would he use to describe Dems in lockstep during Obamacare? Any courage there? Question mark.
I have a response. Give me a break.
Yeah. I find it funny how the nation is in quite possibly the greatest constitutional crisis since the Civil War, teetering on using U.S. soldiers against American citizens. And this person's complaint is that we gave Americans free, you know, health care. I mean, get a grip.
The gall. This on a similar vein. Malcolm, this is from Bill, who says, does Malcolm think the military will follow Trump's orders to do something like taking over Congress?
Oh, well, let me just, you know, I get these questions from both sides of the aisle all the time. First off and foremost, the armed forces of the United States swears that oath to the Constitution of the United States, and 99% of us take it seriously. If there's anybody in there who is thinking about going, you know, using violence against American citizens who would follow what is clearly would be an unlawful order, they will be quickly shouted down, if not taken out of operations by the chain of command and the fellow soldiers. Can I point something out? The armed forces is about 40% minorities. Okay? No one's going to go out and shoot civilians. No one, no officer is going to go out and order his soldiers to take over Congress or to occupy something that's illegal. You will have an immediate split in the chain of command. And you know what? The law says if given unauthorized orders, orders that are unlawful, you will have an obligation not to carry them out and to stop the perpetrators of that order. So if a general orders it, The subordinate commander right below him has an obligation not to carry it out, and if necessary, arrest the general.
Marianne.
Well, Malcolm.
Yeah, but Malcolm.
Go ahead.
No, I just have a question for Malcolm real quick. Malcolm, what do you think of the general who walked across Lafayette Square with the president and stood with his full regalia next to him? Does that fly in the face of what you just said?
Well, that's General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and being
exactly
there in his battle dress uniform, you know, his field uniform instead of his dress blue uniform, I feel like he, you know, if President Trump gives you that as an order, that's an authorized order. If he tells you to follow him, that's an authorized order. He did not stand in the photo lineup. Secretary Esper did that. Then General Milley the next day said he was there observing the operations, and within 24 hours, he himself has put out a letter saying the oath of loyalty to the United States is given to the Constitution and not to any other entity, and that he expects that the armed forces will serve the Constitution. That was his. I thought he would be fired by the end of the day, but apparently,
why did he do it?
You know, he looks like someone from Central Casting, so Trump won't do it yet.
So why did he do it?
But I think
Malcolm,
I think because it's getting out of hand. And I think that if Trump wants a rebellion, he'll keep pushing these guys. But chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff coming out and essentially using the, you know, the Constitution of the United States to slap down a president indirectly is, I think it's the first step in their no longer viewing his behaviors as authorized and lawful orders.
Mariana writes to us and says, oh, I'm sorry, Jen, go ahead.
Yeah, the one thing I want to say, though, is that the challenge of convincing the American public about this, that, you know, no one in the military, the National Guard, is going to attack civilians. Anyone who remembers Kent State, where 13 unarmed students were shot by National Guard's people, are going to have a problem with trust. And trust is a huge issue right now in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, but that was a very different era of the armed forces and the National Guard. The amount of
We're in a different era now where we're seeing, you know, similar things where people are hearkening and making references back to the civil rights era and previous eras, but we see history repeating over and over again. And I think that's a very legitimate fear of what's happening in the public mindset right now.
Yeah, I think it's good that the public has that fear and that they should view the armed forces as an organization that is not designed to go after them. But the service members won't do it. This is not Vietnam. There are no conscripts in there. Senior NCOs like myself, I'll be the first one to call, you know, BS on any order and stand between my soldiers and that person giving that order. And I'll be backed up by my soldiers. And I don't think it'll happen here. If it ever does happen, oh, God forbid.
Yeah.
Scary.
Let's go to this letter from Mariana. By the way, I don't know which panelist is about to be arrested, but whoever it is, we support you. Mariana says, everyone keeps saying we'll vote Trump out in November. I've been saying for a long time there will be no election. This gets to what you were just talking about, Malcolm. Why aren't we preparing for Trump to do everything in his power to prevent or delegitimize this upcoming election?
I think there'll be an election, and I think the system, you will finally see the system process itself. First, the Constitution says there must be an election. Anyone that stands against that is doing sedition or sedition at the very least. He will have to go. You know, I don't think the Secret Service belonged to him. We haven't gotten to the point where he has loyalist entities in the government. He just has political commissars.
Plus, if it happened, if he did manage to hijack the election, that really would be. My son is already underground kind of resistance. That really would turn people against him. I really think that would be beyond the pale.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, and Malcolm Nance, we welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a real good one. WAMC's Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, and Malcolm Nance. We, of course, also look forward to your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we will get to your letters in just a few minutes. I do want to get to, as we're talking about George Floyd, I do want to talk about President Obama, who has been certainly over the last couple of weeks has been more involved and has been talking about these issues that are around, whether it be COVID or what is happening with George Floyd. Yesterday, he offered a starkly more upbeat assessment of peaceful protest and their motives than President Trump has, urging people to, quote, remember that the country was founded on protest. It is called the American Revolution. For those who have been talking about protest, just remember that this country was founded on protest, Mr. Obama said from his home in Washington. He made the comments during an online roundtable event with his former Attorney General Eric Holder Jr., an activist from Minneapolis, sponsored by My Brother's Keeper Alliance, a nonprofit group that Mr. Obama founded. Quote, every step of progress in this country, every expansion of freedom, every expression of our deepest ideals have been won through efforts that made the status quo uncomfortable, said Mr. Obama, who adopted a conciliatory tone that contrasted sharply with Mr. Trump's tweets and public remarks. President Obama went on to say, and we should all be thankful for folks who are willing in a peaceful, disciplined way to be out there making a difference. Alan, what do you make of the former president speaking out?
Well, first of all, you know, I watched him, and I just I was incredibly impressed and emotional as I watched what a real president, somebody who spoke from the heart, but who was eloquent and who did not try to turn people against each other, did. So I, you know, I'm a huge Obama fan, and I just thought it was terrific. I wished a little bit more vehemence, but, you know, what I got was terrific.
Rosemary?
Yeah, and I am not a George W. Bush fan, but he also has spoken eloquently and presidentially, unlike Donald Trump. And Jimmy Carter has also made a statement. I've heard people say, and I wish that it would happen, that the ex-presidents, the club, would come out together. They seem to be in alignment from their individual statements, but what a push against Trump it would be if they all came out together and spoke out against his nastiness.
Well, and they're also talking about a possible endorsement, which I think is interesting.
Yes. Well, Mary, don't you think that the possibility is that, not that I care what he says, but that he would say, see, this is a great example of me versus the deep state?
Yeah, he could say that, just like he said, yeah, I was inspecting the bunker, but the
right.
symbolism of it is so powerful that I think that it's worth it.
Malcolm, what goes into a bunker inspection? Having never had to inspect a bunker, is that a hard thing to do?
Well, first of all, the toilets have to be working.
Yeah, that's right.
No, let me tell you, I know what went on. And what it was is that the noise and the intensity of the protests got closer and closer, you know, the use of the flashbangs by the police, you know, the riot control methods got intense. And the head of the Secret Service security detail said, for your own safety and as an overabundance of precaution, Mr. President, we are going to remove you to the secure location, you know, the secure skiff down in the bunker, you know, down in the basement of the White House. And we just want you there with your wife and kids just in case. You know, the Secret Service, and I've worked with them, they feel like everyone, from the guy walking his dog to a crowd of 10,000, that they're always 1 minute from coming over that fence.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could understand it, but look, he deserves his moniker, Bunker Boy. Okay? I mean, he's a coward in every technical sense of the word. I mean, he is literally a physical, quantifiable, verifiable coward.
You know, look, I think you're right, Malcolm, but I don't think there was anything wrong with him going in that bunker. There is reasons to protect
him. No, you should have put a dope on.
The problem is that he couldn't own it. He couldn't just say, yeah, we did this. That's how bad things are. He had to act like, no, he was a big hero. It's the lie that bothers me.
Yeah, I agree with Rosemary. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, I mean, if your head of security is telling you to go, you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, the not owning it is weird.
For sure.
Jen, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just going back to the original, the forum that was held last night, I wanted to point out and share with listeners sort of three takeaways. And I do see a potential point for Obama to fire back, or I'm sorry, Trump to fire back. And that's one of the things that was raised was this 2015 task force report on 21st century policing. Again, you know, the work that has been done by the Obama administration, it's been brought up again, but, you know, Trump could easily tear it down as an Obama-era policy instead of just being a good policy because he has these bickering politics with this particular former president. The other thing that Obama has done under My Brother's Keeper Alliance was put out a call to mayors and city council officials to sign a pledge to review the use of police force policies, to engage communities in proactive and positive solutions, and seek feedback from these communities. So, like, all the right things are happening, but again, you know, will this be a Trump retaliation of just tearing down, you know, someone he doesn't like versus supporting what is a good practice?
Mm-hmm. Alan?
Well, you know, again, I go back to how impressed I was with Obama and what he said. I just think what the American people must have been thinking, I know I was, what a contrast. What a contrast between this guy who's doing, you know, his most to divide us and this fellow Obama who reminds us what a great leader can be. I haven't got much more to say than that.
When you, I'm going to go to the letters here in just a second, but when it comes down to, I am fascinated by this idea of, Rosemary, as you were saying, of all the presidents, this club, the former presidents coming out and how that would, because I agree. I mean, I think that's a very powerful statement, isn't it?
As to where, that's why the thing about the election, I can't see him derailing an election, because then wouldn't everybody stop this very careful holding of their fire, and the military leaders would come out jointly and say this is wrong, and the ex-presidents would say it. But why do we have to go to that point? Aren't we almost at that point right now?
Right. Yeah. We go to the letters. John says, as a retired cop, I look back at my career, late 70s to the 21st century, as the heyday for great improvements in law enforcement and community policing, domestic violence reform, cultural awareness programs, among others. Yes, these were in response to existing problems, but improvements nonetheless. I believe the turning point was 9/11. That is when officers stopped protecting and serving to become first responders. Training, recruiting, and attitudes all changed. I could go on, .. says John. Yeah.
You know, this is, I think this is unique. I get accused a lot because I'm so outspoken about police brutality. But there really are very good policemen, and they're important people in our society, and we're seeing it a lot in these protests. I am so impressed by the chief in at least Denver and Minneapolis and other places who've marched with protesters, who have taken the knee, who have said, yeah, you're right. They good cops ought to be as outraged as citizens at abuses like we saw in Minneapolis, and they're actually, I think, standing up and doing it this time. I don't remember that from unfortunately the many former abuses that we've seen along these lines. Do you? Not in South Carolina or in Minneapolis. I don't remember this happening.
Yeah, good point. Marty says, I fear Malcolm's view of soldiers not following illegal orders is far too optimistic. I watched a YouTube live feed of the D.C. protests last night, and the unidentified soldiers would not even look the protesters in the eye. My gut is that they will follow their orders even if they are illegal. Haven't they already?
Well, that depends on the order. And to go out and do riot control is not an unlawful order. Unlawful order would be to take weapons, load them, and fire on American citizens. I mean, I have had a lot of people under my command, and even the youngest, and, you know, we're all young and stupid when we're first in the armed forces, they all remember the Boston Massacre, right? And they may not remember Kent State, but what's being thrown in their face right now and what they're discussing in their barracks is how they're whether they're going to or not going to do it. When you're really young, you think, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out and get action. But, you know, when you're hit with a bottle, you might get hot. Kent State was a very, very different world back then. And those people were all conscripts. You've got to volunteer to want to take this job. And I don't think anybody will be fixing bayonets and coming after civilians. Otherwise, I mean, they can find themselves court-martialed relatively quickly, too.
Well, and I just want to point out that that's kind of what's happening in Massachusetts right now. There's actually an investigation of a soldier allegedly posting some inflammatory remarks that include, quote, "You're all stupid and I can't wait to shoot you tomorrow night." So there is definitely legitimate concern, and this is a real investigation that's happening.
Oh my, you just cannot imagine how I would be tearing through his barracks if I was his senior NCO and I saw that. I would be a blade.
Get him, Malcolm.
And they would,
Does anyone have difficulty picturing that, by the way? Not here. I don't.
No, but this is what the jobs of these sergeant majors and master sergeants, first sergeants, this is their job, is to recalibrate stupid. And that statement, he needs to be court-martialed and put out of the military.
Wow.
Let's go back to the letters, and we go to Eliza, who says, Biden deserves no credit. He's a terrible candidate, but holy cow, look at the alternative. I would vote for Harvey Weinstein before I'd vote for Trump. As long as Biden has a pulse, he will benefit from the crap show unfolding every day. That from Eliza. Ed says there is no great mystery to the origins of racism in this country. In the 18th century, when slavery and serfdom was being roundly rejected in Europe by people from all classes of society, the plantation owners and slave traders in the colonies worked very hard to dehumanize black people. Our founding fathers, who recognized the cotton industry as one of the driving forces behind our new nation's economy, jumped on board and, for the purposes of ratifying the Constitution in 1787, defined the people in the preamble as free white men. The government effectively rolling over for big business. Has anything really changed? Stephanie says, where are all the good guys with guns? Isn't police and government overreach the reason we protect the Second Amendment? Where are all the Second Amendment supporters now? Why are they not marching with their AR and macho voices? Are they okay with oppression as long as it's not against them? By not supporting this government overreach, their silence supports this institutional racism. Thank you for being here and for me to help stay informed. I feel like you were all my family.
I have to say, I'm utterly confused by calls to Second Amendment supporters by the president these days. As written, it calls for the well-established militia to protect against state takeover. Isn't that the troops that Trump wants to send in? I'm utterly confused what he wants. Does he want him out shooting protesters? What does he want?
Let me tell you something. As a gun owner, a person who at one time in history was a member of the NRA, and then in the 1980s, they went crazy and started sending out flyers that they were supposed to not be teaching kids how to do marksmanship for skeet shooting, but they were supposed to use their guns to overturn a corrupt government. It was radical how fast they became radical. Now they have inculcated this image of the AR-15 rifle as the new Minuteman rifle, and that their supporters are supposed to be out overthrowing tyranny. Apparently, tyranny is not being able to get a haircut. So, but the president, no, that's why they all turned out. Remember? Social distancing, they didn't want to wear a mask, and they came out with their guns. Now they view themselves as the foot soldiers of a coming race war. Look, when I was back teaching counterterrorism in the armed forces and the Oklahoma City bombing massacre happened, and we realized Timothy McVeigh was literally trying to recreate a race war scenario written in a book called The Turner Diaries, when he killed 186 people. These are his children. And they believe in this, that there will be a war and that they're all going to be the Wolverines operating behind the lines of leftist enemies who are all around them. The only thing I can't see these people ever resisting is, you know, a stop at the snack bar, because they're all out of shape, but they still are all armed.
By the way, I just want to say very quickly that we talked about it at 7:40 this morning. There's a indication that we are selling more guns in the United States than ever before, right now.
Terrifying.
Yeah. You know what? Let me tell you something. Don't watch the sale of guns. I watch this very carefully on a day-to-day basis. It's the price of ammunition that tells you the level of intensity. AR-15 ammunition pre-pandemic was about 30 cents. down from its high of 50 cents in Newtown, after Newtown, when the great Obama gun buyout happened. Now it's over 55 cents a bullet and climbing, because they think they're going to have a war with Trump as their leader. And one other thing, liberals keep asking me if they should buy guns. None of you buy guns. Guns are what you want to bring in your house if you want to kill your child by accident. No guns.
Those are liberals who want to buy guns? Okay. Matthew, I don't know that. Matthew says, not all evangelicals is the subject line. I'm an evangelical Christian. I am outraged that Trump tear gassed peaceful protesters on church property in order to clear them so he could take a photo. He didn't get permission from the church's bishop. I find that very concerning. Yes, some evangelicals like the photo, but not all. Those of us who are paying attention are not happy. That from Matthew. Frederica says, I am seeing cracks in the Republicans. I've been following the Lincoln Project, President George W. Bush, his sons PAC, George Will, and Jonathan Goldberg, all very critical of Trump. They have legitimate criticisms and want him removed from office. That brings us to Jerry, who says, I have great respect for Malcolm's expertise. He has named Antifa as the perpetrators of violence. Please comment on the report that a right-wing group named VROPA made false tweets to make it appear that Antifa was organizing the violence. Also, there are reports of white-wing, right-wing, I assume is what that means, right-wing groups being involved in the violence.
Yeah, good question. First off, Antifa is literally everybody who is against fascism, right? So there's that famous post by the commanding general of the 82nd Airborne on the memorial of D-Day, where he said the 82nd Airborne has a deep history of anti-fascism, showing troops with Nazi flags in Normandy, right? It's like saying vegetarianism. No offense to vegetarians. Whoever uses this term is using it maliciously. They are not a terrorist group because they have no organization. They operate as individuals in groups of two, three, five. They make it up, and they almost exclusively are white, young, extreme left, going around to libertarian right. There was a right-wing extremist group in Europe called Identity Europa that created a fake Antifa U.S. Twitter feed where they put out a statement that now we are going from the hood into the suburban areas. We're going to take what we find from whites. This disinformation traveled far. I mean, I'm on some gun groups. I was seeing people post this and saying, now we've got to protect our houses. Disinformation today is insidious. And you know what? Right-wing groups, they too want to see a race war. Some of these left-wing, anarchy groups, they want to see chaos, and a race war would bring that. I draw attention to the video of the two white women spray-painting Black Lives Matter, black supremacy on a Starbucks, and refusing to listen to the black women who were telling them to stop. So we have all sorts of players here, and I'm a big advocate of you guys grabbing those people and turning them over to the cops when you see them do destruction and vandalism.
Kay says, I respectfully disagree with Malcolm. This is the generation that saw the Boston bombing, but they also know Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden very well. We have examples of soldiers following unethical orders, and we see the punishments for dissenters. The military needs to do a lot of work as well.
Chelsea Manning violated a classified information handling laws and gave millions of classified documents away. Edward Snowden is just a straight-up traitor.
We go to Diane, who says, Rosemary saying that all the former presidents should appear publicly and showing a united front is a wonderful suggestion. The church and Bible stunt was atrocious, especially because he tear-gassed innocent protesters. That brings us to Roger, who agrees with Rosemary and the letter writer prior, saying, Rosemary is absolutely right on this one, how powerful it would be to have a joint statement for all former presidents to issue, similar to the one by the former Secretary of state. The president must be removed one way or another before an election that he will definitely call a fraud, fake news, and simply refuse to step down, doing something even more outrageous and unconstitutional than we have seen. Even more compelling, not that it would happen, would be an unprecedented statement by the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell and Trump's enablers in the Senate refuse to even criticize him.
There is no, there, you know, Joe,
yes.
There is not a single indication that the four or five, we just saw the Chief Justice take a different view than the other four, but they're not going to change. And if he gets, if Trump gets two more appointments to the Supreme Court, it'll be a regular 6-vote majority. I have no doubt about it. I think these people know who signed the paycheck, who got them there, and they are not going to do an unprecedented defiance of the president.
Rosemary?
I think the Supreme Court, that's lost as far as opposing Trump. Nor is that really their job. I mean, I think there's more effect would come from the presidents who have been in that job before and therefore really know what the pressures are and what should be done. Their standing up would have a real meaning. And now, I keep having the feeling they're saying, okay, wait, let's see what he's going to do next, because if they you can only do this one time. The statement won't have an effect if they do it every week. But how far does it go? The election, calling off something in the election, that would totally be a step too far. But I don't know what comes before then.
All right.
Rosemary, you have no doubt that he, based on his past performance, of all the things we thought he would never do, that he might.
Yeah.
So 15 seconds.
I can't rule it out. I can't say, oh, Alan, that's ridiculous, which I would be happy to say.
How could that happen? Yeah. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and we'll have our last go-round. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this news break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, and Malcolm Nance on the program this morning. Let's go back to the letters. And says Barry, says Trump is doing the best he can, and that's the problem. Simple as that. Lydia says, with every group of people there is, the same 1% that acts in ways most of us cannot fathom, the bad 1% of cops are those killing African Americans. Among the protesters, the bad 1% are looting and acting violently. So we have to assume there is at least that same 1% of bad actors in the military. And when you combine that with the dynamics of a group, with the brute strength of the army. Let's see. We go to James, who says, someone please clue me as to, this sounds like it's for you, Malcolm. Someone please clue me as to how Barr had the authority to command military types to clear 45's little parade to the church. I missed that one.
Yeah, that's an interesting set of orders there. First off, Barr himself was authorized to bring forces in from the Department of Justice. A lot of those riot police you saw were Bureau of Federal Prisons officers who were SWAT teams and rapid response teams were brought in from prisons all over the country, which is why they already had their own
too, didn't they, Malcolm?
I'm sorry, what, Rosemary?
Use DEA as well.
Yes. Well, he brought in SWAT teams, DEA SWAT teams, FBI SWAT teams from a lot of the field offices. He brought in a lot of these personnel. You see them in all green. Those were probably those people. And Customs and Border Patrol. So the military was actually a relatively small component of that. The D.C. National Guard, which is authorized to be, because it's federal, placed under the Department of Justice as supplementary force, which is why when you saw those guys, they were wearing little City of D.C. patches. And then they tried to nationalize the Washington, D.C. police force. And Mayor Muriel Bowser, who I've met several times, is a very admirable character. She flat out resisted and said, we won't do that. We'll stop participating with you. So that's how Barr got away with it. He used federal law enforcement forces subordinate to the Department of Justice.
We got this from Joseph. It says, "Hiya, panel. Apparently, I am the worst nightmare of the Trumpers and the lefties, as I am a staunch liberal and I own plenty of guns. When and if a revolution occurs, the liberals of Massachusetts will step up and do the right thing as we did in 1775. In the meantime, we obey the laws and support the Second Amendment as we do also support the First."
Quick point. Hey, I was just in South Egremont the other day at the site of the last Battle of the Shays Rebellion. And look, leave it to the way George Washington put it. The army is going to step up when they need to step up. Civilians don't need to get into this. Remember what Washington said about those hillbillies who rebelled with their rifles? Bring cannons. So forget about these militia men and forget about you forming your own militia. All right, go out and plunk paper.
All right. We lost Rosemary, so if she's listening, please call back. Okay. Maybe she doesn't even know that we lost her. Eric says, "I'm waiting for Biden to put together the truth that Trump both disbanded the pandemic response team set up by Obama and discontinued the efforts of the DOJ to pursue consent decrees to curb abusive police departments. The pattern is consistent and egregious. We need to return to responsible government. In Tiananmen Square, the Chinese government brought in troops from the provinces who didn't identify with the student protesters. This ensured that they would follow orders to shoot. Let's hope that the National Guard and Army personnel can identify with citizens in the streets of our country." Malcolm?
I think they will. There were already some people breakdancing with protesters and doing dancing that were National Guard troops and actually took a knee in Los Angeles. The armed forces are the fabric of this nation. They're representative, actually over-representative of the minority in this nation. And I really think, you know, even with those 1%, I really don't think that we have a lot to fear in that respect. But I do have one thing to fear. Since Trump is overturning everything Obama did and respected, I mean, I guess he's just going to tear the Constitution up any minute now when someone explains that Obama lived by it.
Let us, in a few moments, Rosemary, you're back, so I'm curious.
I'm back, yes, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry you got bumped. So the story that I'm interested in here, we talked about this, we talked about Senator Cotton. But the New York Times staffers denouncing the newspaper for Cotton's op-ed urging military incursion into U.S. cities. The staff members publicly rebuking the paper for this opinion piece. It was backlash, which spilled out on Twitter, came from dozens across the organization and included opinion writers, reporters, editors, and magazine staffers. Several tweeted the same message. Running this puts black at New York Times staffers in danger, with an image of the editorial's headline, "Tom Cotton, send in the troops." What do you make of that?
Well, I'm a First Amendment absolutist, almost absolutist. And I think that Cotton's point of view is held by many people and that it's important for the New York Times to run it. So I'm siding with the controversial editor on this, James Bennett, who has put other voices on there that have annoyed people, like the Taliban. It is not Cotton's words in the New York Times that put staffers at danger. It's Antifa and rioting and sending troops into places they don't belong. That's what puts them at danger. And staffers, I don't get that idea that printing this put us in danger. Better to be write the opposite point of view, write another piece and have Bennett run that, not protesting, not calling for censorship of someone whose views they disagree with.
Jen?
I'd like to.
I don't know.
Okay, Alan?
Alan,
too.
No, that's all right. Jen first. Go ahead.
You know, I'm speaking as a brown woman who is a reporter, who if any of the staff members feel, and this is a conversation, maybe this conversation should have happened before this op-ed, hit the pages. But you can't neglect, what reporters have to deal with, because they're going to deal. We deal with the backlash of whatever we publish, and people, we don't have strong media literacy in this country. So people are going to look at what is an op-ed and see it as an article and blame your publication. It happens all the time. I've experienced it a ton. But again, I don't disagree with reporters, you know, voicing what they're up against. And, you know, if they feel that way, those feelings are legitimate. They're on the ground. They have to be listened to.
Oh yeah.
Their voices matter just as much as Cotton's.
But Cotton should be there. I mean, they both belong there. That's the point. And what they were calling for was to censor Cotton because that's a point of view that they find offensive.
Yeah. Alan?
Well, do you do an article on that, or do you let the op-ed happen?
I have to say I agree with Rosemary. I really do. Look, Joe, when you have Rich Honan on, and he is takes a different point of view, and a different point of view from me. But we have him. We get a lot of objections, but we love to have him because he does represent a different point of view, and people should be able to hear that. I think Jen is right. If the reporters want to say to the Times editors, you shouldn't have done it, you put us at risk. Fine, that's an opinion also. Mm. But when we had Herb London on, right. I never agreed with a thing Herb London said. He died, but never agreed with a thing he said. And yet, it was very important to have him and to have somebody from the London Institute right now.
Do you think that that's giving, you know, a lot of time and spotlight at an already, you know, emotionally and socially, you know, challenging time? Like, would it feel different? Would we be having this conversation if the op-ed ran this time last year versus right now?
It wouldn't have been newsworthy. I mean, come on, Jen. No, I'm not in favor.
Exactly, but that's exactly my point.
I don't know what the point was then, if that's the case. If you can't have editorial decisions made by committee, then you end up with a bland, no offend anyone, boring, awful, unreadable page. Bennett has put down an absolutely incendiary column, and there will be reaction to it, which he can also cover. That's what debate really is, or should be, if you want to keep people reading newspapers, which I do. They're not at risk. The people who wrote in are not at risk because Tom Cotton, and people don't know who Tom Cotton is or think that this is an article, not just an opinion. What are you supposed to do, edit for stupid people?
I agree with Rosemary and Alan here on this one. First off, it doesn't put anybody at risk, right? The First Amendment doesn't put people at risk. And since I come from a world where information is power and is what we need to identify who our opponents should be and what the threats are, I'm glad Tom Cotton told me what the mindset of this White House is.
Right.
I am glad he
I completely agree with that.
Of the extreme right.
Well, so Jen,
you know, I completely agree with that, but at the same time, you know, do you have context, and what other reporting are you doing around it, or is that the only way that you're getting that opinion out there? You know, are you asking other people? But I think Cotton's a really interesting case because he is potentially in line to, you know,
to be Secretary of
Defense. Secretary of Defense. So, you know, I would have liked to see more.
Hold on.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Jen's argument would have validity if there were any other newspaper than the New York Times, which has extensively covered the other side, the liberal anti-bring in the troops movement. That's silly.
Well, you just had a cartoon in the Berkshire Eagle, Jen, and I really wish I remember this a little better. But I do remember your excellent editor, Kevin Moran, apologized for running that cartoon. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's happened before, and it happened today. The AP recently, you know, in their This Day in History, Today in History package, which they send out and syndicate nationally, included a quote from Jefferson Davis. Some papers caught it, some papers didn't, ourselves included. We had to issue an apology today. And that's important. We should, you know, be paying attention to context for that. And again, I was horrified that it happened. But again, you know,
what was the quote?
We just have about a minute left. But go ahead.
It was a Jefferson Davis quote. I don't remember what it was, but you know, they have
just the fact that it was Jefferson Davis.
Exactly. You don't need much more, do you? Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, as statues and monuments are coming down across our nation, you know, to these Confederate folks. So, yeah, you have to give context and consciousness to that as well.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to the whole group this morning. Alan Chartok, thank you. Rosemary Armeo, Jen Smith, Malcolm Nance, thank you all. Good to have you aboard. We'll be back with more show and Congressional Corner. And we'll be back with the panel tomorrow morning. Thank you all. We'll be back.